Welcome to the RC Noob Podcast. This is episode 28. My name is Tim. Thank you for listening to yet another episode of this show. If you are a first-time listener, you're in for a treat. As with all of our shows, I think we have fun, entertaining, educational, informational, jam-packed, you name it, the adjectives can just run wild here. I'm going to be talking to a very interesting individual about a very interesting topic. We're getting away from cars and trucks and surface RC vehicles for this episode. We're going to be talking about quadcopters, multi-rotors, drones, however you want to term them, specifically quadcopter and drone racing. That's been getting some mainstream coverage lately, and I just want to talk about the topic as a whole. They're trying to make this the quote-unquote sport of the future. I think it has a lot of potential, but I think there's a lot of work to be done, and depending on what different organization you pay close attention to or closer attention to, there are a few organizations that are popping up both within America and overseas. In fact, the timing of this, I wanted to talk to my guest, who I'll introduce shortly, specifically about the recent World Drone Prix, which took place over in Dubai. That was a spectacle of spectacles. It was just amazing, the theatrics that were put into it and everything else. But I think there was a little bit, from a spectator standpoint, I think there was a little bit that was left to be desired. And again, that's just my spectator input. We'll talk to our guest about his thoughts momentarily. So we're getting away from cars and trucks in a moment. The biggest news, I guess, to give you all an update on industry news and hobby news, I think the elephant in the room, or the biggest news topic over the last week, has been the rumored purchase of HPI by Traxxas. Now, it's big news if true. So having owned both types of vehicles, I'm always saddened to see a big name, or even a little name, you know, in the hobby potentially go away. I feel that competition drives any industry, and without one company making one thing and going one direction, if that's gone, then, you know, that possible avenue for the rest of the industry to shift over into, that's gone as well. So, and I understand HPI is in a little bit of financial trouble. They've posted that on their website. It's been well-known information, if you pay close attention to HPI, since I believe the beginning of the year, if not late last year. So again, that's all rumor at this point. We'll see how that all shakes out in the coming weeks. But we'll definitely provide updates on that as that news evolves. So that's enough of car talk for now. Let's look to the sky. So I'm very, very excited to introduce my guest for today. We're going to be talking with Mr. Peter Gray. And Mr. Peter Gray, for those of you that have been in the hobby for a long time or just for a short time, you may have read a lot of his writing. Peter is the former editor of Radio Race Car International, and he is now the editor of rccar.zone, as well as the recently just launched UK Drone Show magazine. Both of those publications are available for free. I'll let Peter give you a little bit more information on those two momentarily. But Peter, welcome to the RC Noob Podcast.
Hi, it's great to be here. I'm awake. Are you awake?
Getting there.
Good. Oh, I would say one thing as well is I've also edited other drone magazines. I was editor of a magazine called RC Flight Camera Action for 3 issues. And then I set up my own digital publishing business and set Aussie Carzone up, as most people know, and now the UK Drone Show magazine. So it's something I've been interested in for many, many years. I've helped with TV programs like The Gadget Show as well, where we've put drone racing and drones on the TV, even things like flying filming platforms into firework displays to prove how good the camera systems are and things like that. It's something that's, you know, kind of been in my blood for the last 4 or 5 years.
So you'd call yourself a subject matter expert? putting it mildly.
I would say any subject that I'm interested in, I totally immerse myself in it. I have done since I was 8 or 9. So I've had nearly 40 years of RC cars, dabbled with planes for a while, had helicopters, but drones are something that I think really excited me when I first saw the first ones. You know, you built your own. There was no almost ready to fly or ready to fly back 4 or 5 years ago. And it's something I've been interested in ever since. If you saw how many I physically have at the moment in the house, I think you would laugh. And that goes for cars as well.
Okay, so I wanted to get you on the show, and we've talked about this off air quite in depth, but that's the topic, topic of the day is competitive quadcopter / drone racing. There are a number of entities out there that are trumpeting loudly that this is the sport of the future. And I want to believe that. I'm hopeful that it could be that someday, but I think there's a lot of work to be done. And specifically, I wanted to get your thoughts, you know, from a spectator standpoint, from an industry worker standpoint on the World Drone Prix. And, you know, I want to share some of my thoughts coming at it from a spectator standpoint, but, you know, with the World Drone Prix, what was your immediate impression of the overall event, and what are your immediate takeaways from that event?
I think looking at it from the outside, it set a massive benchmark visually. It gave people that were never involved in FPV quad racing, multi-rotor racing, a real wow factor. It translated some people's ideas from, hey, it's like wipe out the computer game, but with RC. And it actually visualized it in a really good way. The theater, I thought, was amazing. And when you saw the first images at night when the whole of the track was lit up and all the, you know, pneumatic arms and things that could make the gates and stuff like that, I thought it was amazing. I mean, the staging of it was brilliant. But when it came to the racing and viewing it from a, you know, an outside point of view as a spectator online, as I did, and I think you did, and thousands of people globally, there were certain aspects of that, especially on day one, that didn't work. But day two, they kind of pulled it out of the bag a little bit more. And we were all screaming and shouting at the TV for our favorite pilots. And luckily, one of my favorite pilots, Banny, one of the UK guys, won it. So, you know, I'm not biased at all, honestly. I mean, I remember seeing Luke a couple of years ago at some real grassroots racing, and he totally, you know, blew everybody away, and we could see how talented he was. And he's had lots of ups and downs. Some races he's won, some races he's lost that I've been at. But, you know, when we staged the UK Drone Show last December, it was an indoor event, and there was 2 full days of racing. He won both days outright. You know, we could see how talented he was then. And I think it was the perfect event for him and a lot of the big name pilots out there. I think it's one of the first times, other than the big event that happened in America last year, where all the big name pilots and brands, manufacturers had all got together in one place. And I thought that was great to see. I think it really showed a unity for the sport and how far we've come in the last 2 years as well. I don't know what you think about that.
I'll be completely honest. I really haven't paid close attention to the competition side of FPV multi-rotor racing up until this year. It's been on my radar. It just hasn't been something that I've really tuned in on or paid a close amount of attention to. But after sitting down and just having the time and giving myself the time to watch portions of races, it's interesting. It has the possibility to get me hooked. I'm a motorsports fan, a NASCAR fan specifically. But I, you know, if it's got wheels on, if it goes fast, if it can give the impression of close side by side action, you know, with that lure or allure of danger, then that interests me, and I want this to give me that same feeling. It's got, for me, it has the possibility to do that. It needs to go a little bit further, and I'll share my thoughts on how they could go a little bit further.
The best analogy I could offer, I think, was, and I don't know whether you were watching this weekend, we had the Neo Buggy race going on in the UK. We're all over the world, people who are into off-road, IC, and electric-powered racing were watching that, because it's the top drivers from across the globe all competed against each other on a really cool indoor circuit. The way that was shown online and the commentary and the feedback from the people viewing it, instantly they were posting questions on Facebook and the commentators were picking up on them and then asking questions of, say, the drivers or the teams, or following a certain driver because somebody had asked them to do it. There was much more of a two-way conversation going on between the viewing public and the guys commentating on the event itself. And that would have worked brilliantly, that kind of format, for the Dubai event. I'm not saying the commentary was bad, especially on the second day. It really, really improved. But there were a lot of things where we had, you know, like dead airspace, or, you know, nothing going on and nobody talking about the teams or things like that. And that was the bit. I watched it solidly for the 2 days it was on. And the first day, to me, kind of put me off a little bit. But because I love passionately the sport, I just wanted to watch it. And I wanted to see how well our guys did, especially, you know, the X-Blades guys. But also there's other pilots that I've followed on YouTube, Mr. Steel, people like that. I just want to see them fly and see what they're capable of.
Yeah, let's talk about the production of the event. I think we could break that down even further. You know, the track itself, the actual racetrack, race course, was immaculate. It was larger than life. It did things that I didn't think a course could do. With, you know, as you mentioned, the pneumatics, having the arms moving up and down.
Do you not think that wasn't utilized enough?
It was neat as a gimmick, but I don't think they utilized it enough. I think it could have had some functionality and effect on the racing action more than it did. It just, you know, it's like they made the arms move just to say they could make the arms move, and that was about it.
It was theater. It was almost Geiger looking. It was like something out of Aliens or something like that, which is, you know, what made me think of. But I would have liked to see longer tunnel sections, or a little bit of jeopardy where the arms are moving on maybe five of the arms in one section, and it goes from wide open to, you know, actually forming a gate. So it actually visually looks like there's a bit of jeopardy involved. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I mean, I'm not saying like fire flames across the track or do anything as crazy as that, but I just think you've got such an amazing pneumatic experience going on there in theater. Use it more than just to set the scene in between races or to show how cool the lighting and the track is.
Yeah, just a better utilization of what they had built. And I can only imagine the cost that went into constructing that structure.
I think it'll go worldwide, that track. I think there's events planned, especially there's one in New York. And obviously I think there's a big finals, Hawaii, there's lots of other events planned. I think now that track's there, it will be transported a bit like Monster Jam do, transport their whole, you know, kit and caboodle wherever they go, set up and then set an event up, they'll do the same thing. So I don't think it's money spent on just that. I think you'll see that track develop and be utilized over and over again.
Well, that's good. Would hate to hear that they're wasting their money on a one-off. But I think, like you said, if you could make or form tunnels, even if you progress through the event, if stage one is all arms down, there's no tunnels, there's no extra things to fly through, then that's fine. Stage two, we're going to crank things up a little bit. You know, you're going to make the course a little more treacherous, make things a little bit more difficult. And then you, as the event progresses, you ratchet up that danger. Danger for the machines themselves, danger for the perceived danger for the pilots, you know, because they're seeing all this. I can only imagine the adrenaline rush that you get from flying a first person.
I mean, another analogy is we've all seen videos like Sharpu's videos where he's flying around that Spanish half-built hospital or underneath, you know, his Fiat 500 with that 1 foot gap. And through little gaps in walls. And there's another really famous video, Jab 1A is another British pilot around a disused paper mill in the UK. And he's flying in and out of the windows and he's going down the brick corridors and things using FPV. And it's absolutely amazing. Tight little spaces shows how much skill the pilots have got. Whereas, you know, that tunnel is quite big in comparison. So they could make a tunnel 10 arms long and it would still work as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a better utilization of what they had built. And better utilization of the functionality that they had built into the structure. I was a little confused. I'll admit that during the preliminary races were being held in a small building.
Yeah.
And I hadn't known about that larger course, that was eventually where the final races would be held. I thought the whole thing was then going to be held in this small building. And I was a little bit let down by that. I was thankful that wasn't the case, but it's, you know, this is being trumpeted as this large event. And then you go to watch the event and it's being held in a gymnasium.
I think,
for lack of a better term.
I mean, that course was designed, the indoor course, to set a benchmark of the abilities of the pilots. I mean, that would weed out, you know, the boys from the men, to be quite honest with you. If you saw how quickly some of the top pilots were flying around there and then some of the slower pilots crashing out, it was a tight, arduous little course. And it may not have been groundbreaking in the design of it, or it may not have actually showed the world, you know, this is how innovative indoor FPV can be. But what it did is it truly seeded the pilots correctly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it did its job. And I actually quite liked seeing that because it was raw. It was the downlink footage from, you know, their FPV feeds. It was, I think some of them did run GoPros on their quads to get some really cool footage, which we saw on YouTube. But that's what FPV racing is all about to me, seeing the raw footage from those guys. And then when the transition happened, you know, it's a bit like Wizard of Oz when you go from black and white to color, Technicolor, boom, you saw that big track. And that's when things changed a little bit. And then they had to obviously modify their quads or race with slightly different form factor quads because they had a big heavy twin camera setup and a, you know, HD downlink and GPS built into a unit on the top, which allowed for all those amazing shots we got, or we didn't properly on the first day, but we did on the second day. And it's almost like competing in a race and being told, right, the first race, you're all going to race Mini Coopers. And then the second race, you're all going to be on a much bigger track in a Ferrari. That's what it felt like to me. What did you think?
That's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it. And again, I full disclosure, I wasn't paying a large amount of attention to this event. I was interested in it, but I wasn't glued to it from the get-go. So some of the disappointment or perceived disappointment that I may have had from, you know, the racing venue, that part of that is on me. But I do think that for as much as large as the event was being heralded as, if you were like me and just kind of quote unquote flipped on the channel at any given time during those prelims, you may have been a little confused, or a little taken back by what you were seeing.
I got very sick of the spinning logo.
Yeah, I did too.
Like, it's still imprinted on my brain now, and we're about, what, 2 weeks since it happened?
I can close my eyes and still see what it is.
Yeah.
To be honest.
What that event really proved to me was, and this is from an editor of a magazine all about drones, 150 pages, free to download. There's my big plug. And as somebody that's probably built 30 in the last few years, and I've got 9 builds in progress at the moment, across the board, from entry level up to full on race spec, I'm actually rebuilding a replica of the drone that Banny UK, Luke Bannister, won with for the next issue. And what it showed me is you can spend thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds or dollars or yen or whatever currency, you know, you work in, developing a really cool, quirky product. But at the end of the day, something really simple, like that KC250 that he won with, that's £45-50 to buy. It's the most simple airframe in the world with decent motors and a decent LiPo battery and a good flight controller that's been programmed properly and good thumbs on a pilot that knows what they're doing, can wipe the floor with everybody. It's not about throwing lots of money at it like a lot of other sports are. Some motorsport, it's about the money your team can put in to have the best blueprint engine or the best tuning, or do you get what I'm coming from? This sport isn't about having lots of money. This sport is truly now about the ability of the pilots and building something that isn't overly expensive but is simple, reliable, and flies well. So, you know, I could go out now and buy a £500 ready-to-fly race drone, and this £45 airframe from the UK would run rings around it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what it proved. Definitely. That's what it proved to me straight away.
Yeah. I think the sport itself is a great opportunity to get younger people, kids, what have you, people of any age, that if you were raised on video games, if you know how to play video games, I think there's an appeal there. And I think, you know, just looking at where the sport could go, I think you've got a very large appeal and a very large potential for appeal to those people, to the gamers, to the people that want to tinker or build things and then see what the machine that they have built is quote unquote seeing. I think that's a draw too for spectators to be able to see from that first person view. And not only are these being flown from a first person view, but they are being, you can get the feed from that camera as well as a spectator.
Yeah. There's a big misconception. What was quoted at the Dubai event by a lot of online tech journalists who run blogs and even big tech magazines is they kept throwing the analogy of virtual reality in there. Well, it's not virtual reality because it's an actual downlink feed of real time what's going on with your drone. So it's actual reality is a term that I'm going to use more often in the magazines I write because that's what it is. It's not virtually something that's made up, fictitious, but actually mimics something real. And it tries to fool you into thinking it's real when it isn't actually. Whereas this is actual reality. You know, you take a wrong turn and you're hitting an object or a tree at up to 80 mile an hour. Good night. Adios, muchachos.
Yeah.
You know, they are durable, but you know, we've all had the moments where we've, I mean, I'm not the fastest pilot in the world. I'll say that now. I'm in my late 40s. My reactions get slower and slower, but I'm a big gamer. I used to be a gaming journalist at one time. I do see the translation, and there's a lot of simulators coming out, like the guys that run the events in London, the Formula FPV events. They've got a simulator out there at the moment, and they've had thousands of pilots from across the world all competing online against each other in this virtual FPV race simulator. And there's a leaderboard, and there's a massive, you know, like bragging rights going on between the UK pilots, the American pilots, and European pilots, who's the fastest. And it's actually proving to be a really good training tool for people that never even bought a quad yet. One guy, actually, I saw a quote the other day, said that all he's done is fly with the simulator, and then he went out and bought an FPV race quad, and it actually helped him fly it. I mean, it's like real pilots do simulator checks. Sure. It works. We proved it on the Gadget Show a few years ago. We gave one of the presenters a simulator for weeks and weeks to practice flying a light aircraft with, and then he actually flew and landed a light aircraft, having never flown one before. It's about muscle memory. It's about, you know, going through the actions over and over again, it becomes second nature. And I think if people like Microsoft and Sony got on the bandwagon of this and said, right, on our live servers, we'll give you this, the same FPV racing sim, like for free or for 99p or something, and you could plug your transmitter into the USB port, could you imagine how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people globally, could be FPV racing? And then that would translate into more pilots getting involved, and hopefully the leagues and the grassroots level racing getting bigger and bigger. That excites me in a big way.
Yeah, I do. It excites me as well. I've always been a firm believer in the power of simulations, and how they can translate into real world situations. Again, speaking from the motorsports side of things, the NASCAR side of things, being a NASCAR fan, I've heard countless drivers say, you know, I spend X number of hours or so much time doing iRacing or doing some other sort of simulation. And while that doesn't give you the same sensation as actual sitting in the car, it's the, you know what to expect. You can still build some.
Top some drivers sort of practice tracks, don't they? It's like the Nürburgring is, you know, what is it, 100 and, I don't know the exact figure, 170 different corners, the full Nürburgring.
Yeah.
And people that go there spend months practicing it on computer games because they're so well mapped these days and the corners are so accurate that if you can learn the track in a really fast car and get that sub, I think it's 7 minute benchmark that they say the Nürburgring, you know, sub 10's fast, but I think some Formula One cars and things have done sub 7, then it's a training tool and it's worthwhile. I never want to kick kids off computer consoles or technology because I think this day and age, they should be immersed in it. I've got a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. My daughter plays with, you know, I've got a Oculus Rift headset. I've got, you know, goggles that I can plug in via HDMI. She can play computer games. I think they should be involved in that because this is their future. And then it'll translate to going out into the real world like she does with me. She came to the last Formula FPV event in London and she sat with a set of my goggles on, getting ride-alongs with all the top pilots. So she saw what they were seeing through their goggles sitting at the side of the track. And that's exciting stuff. And how many kids can say that, you know, especially a 6-year-old, they've been to a race event, they were in Banny UK's heading in theory, if you think about it, seeing what he sees while he was racing and flying. It's the feeling of flying. It's amazing. I mean, that really, truly excites me. And I don't want kids to think, oh, we want them off computer games, because they can work hand in hand. Computer games are great for things like, you know, motor response, reflexes and things like that. They give them to disabled children, people with autism, things like that. There's a real positive side to all of that. That, you know, the sensationalist press will always have a go at gamers or computer games with the negativities about it. And they have done about drones. We've all seen the scares. Oh, there's, you know, a drone nearly hit a plane at 14,000 feet. Well, you know, how would a drone get to that height under control? And how would it get near an airport? There's a million. I could go off on a big rant about that, but I won't. But there's a massive positive side to the hobby and what we do. You know, I'd love one day my son to sit on a simulator when he's old enough, learn to fly a drone, and then I take him to a field and he actually, that translates into him flying it properly for the first time. You know, it works with flight simulators, left, right, and center. That's how I learned to fly helicopters, RC helicopters. I did it on a simulator first, and then it translated to flying it properly. I've smashed them all up and they're all dead now, but that's another story.
Yeah, whatever. But it all started out with a sim, and that's the point.
Yeah.
It needs to be
more accessible. You know, gaming manufacturers need to get on board, and it doesn't need to just be in the realms of a really expensive graphics card on a home-built PC or gaming computer and plugging your transmitter in. It needs to be via consoles. Or even one example is if you've got a powerful tablet, if you could plug your transmitter in via USB, you know, device that gave you a USB socket and you could fly it. You could sit anywhere doing it. You could be on a plane flying between the UK and America practicing FPV racing.
Yeah. I know buggy and off-road racers that use sims to get track time in when they can't, you know, be at the track with their buggies and with their surface RC vehicles. So I know it's a tried and true method. And I think that is a huge possible gateway to get people excited about really any aspect of RC, but, you know, it's specific to quadcopters and drones, to get them interested in these things, to want to then build, buy, and then maybe go race their own, or at least learn how to fly it without crashing it in real life. So I think that's an interesting potential gateway. It would be, you know, simulation use. Jumping back to the World Drone Prix, I know we've talked, again, we've chatted about this off air, but I want to talk about the production, or I guess the final product that was shown to spectators. If you logged in and watched their feed, you could watch FPV feeds from a number of quads. They had a more traditional TV broadcast set up with, you know, different camera angles, things like that. What was your impression of that? That final product that was...
I thought it started off very promisingly because they had a female presenter going around talking to people. And like they went up to Luke and tried to talk to him and other pilots, but there wasn't actually enough of that. And things like the presenters, I mean, on day two, it got, you know, heads and shoulders better because they had people in the booth with them. They had pilots in them, in there from the different teams talking you through the races. And there was more interaction. So those dead spaces were filled in by accurate information. But if you were to just watch day one, it could have put you off even wanting to watch day two if you weren't a hardcore fan. Does that make sense? I think you'd have thought that's the precedent. That's what it's going to be like for day two. I honestly think the amount of money that cost to stage, and it must be, I hate to think, 2-3 million, something silly like that. You'd have thought you'd have got a really good team in who'd been involved with FPV drone racing before, maybe 2 or 3 different presenters in the studio talking to each other properly, who know the pilots, who know the teams, who know the tech. I mean, the one thing I would say is the presenter on day one actually said on air, oh, I know nothing about drones and drone racing. I've been brought in at the last minute. It that kind of, you know, got my hackles up a little bit. It's like me turning around to the over 12,000 people that have now downloaded the Drone Rag and saying, I know nothing about drones. Why should they trust me to put a magazine together and why should they trust the content that me and the, you know, there's nearly 20 people in our contributor team across the board. Why should they trust them? And it's because they've had experience in the industry for many years. They've all built, crashed, rebuilt, bought other ones, flown, raced drones. Some of them make a living from it. They work in TV. Some of them, you know, do this for a profession, seven days a week, travel all over the world, lots of different applications. That's why you should trust them. And I just think in Dubai, there wasn't enough of that from the presenter's point of view. It did get better. And I've got to hats off today too. It ran far slicker. I think there was, you know, more information there. We got to know what was going on. Things were filled in between the races where there was nice video of the background of what went on up to that and, you know, the qualifiers and things like that. But day one was, you know, pretty, not depressing, but it didn't show the industry and the hobby off to its best light is my most tactful answer.
That's a good way, a good amount of insight. I appreciate your getting your perspective.
I could
that.
Be 10 times more passionate. I'm holding it back.
I didn't watch as much of the whole event as I would have liked. I tuned in when I could, and what I saw on day one, I necessarily wasn't a huge fan of. I like you, did see improvement as they went on. That was a welcome change to see. I wish that change never had to take place.
Yeah.
I wish they had their stuff together from the minute they unloaded. You know, having them, and again, I almost want to say they tried to do too much in too little time, or make this, you know, have this thing grow up too big too fast. And I think they just missed some of the basics.
And it can only get better. Let's face it. Every event going forward, the theater and the track set a precedent that we're all going to look at now and go, right, every year it has to at least match that or be better than that. But it's the nature of the way it was covered for everybody looking at it online. And if it ever became televised outside, you know, the Arab Emirates, it was on TV out there in Dubai. People could tune into the channel and actually watch it on TV. We couldn't. We had to, you know, tune in online. But I could see that if they syndicated that feed across the globe and, you know, I could tune in on, say, Sky Sports or something like that and watch it live, that would be a real spectacle. I could sit in the lounge with a group of friends, my family, and watch it the way I do, I don't know, the Super Bowl or the FA Cup or Supercross or, you know, Torque short course racing. They're all things that really excite me. Dragsters, hot rod, you know, I could go on forever, the list. I love anything like that that's an exciting sport. Even things like the Red Bull Rampage, where the mountain bikes, you know, down all the downhill racing and things like that, that's televised here in the UK. If drone racing was to that level, it would be a massive spectator sport, but it needs to be far slicker for it to work. It needs to be looked at a bit more, possibly like Formula One. So the same kind of camera angles, you know, the wire cams, the tracking cams on the corners. I just think the position of the cameras as well didn't help the overall look because it made the drones look slow and it made them look tiny. It was about the perspective of the drones against the track. I don't know whether you agree on that one.
Fully. Fully.
Best again, pass. When you've got the downlink, you can see how quick it is. Certain pilots, I won't keep mentioning the same names, but sure, when you saw their downlinks, they were going quick, really quick. But okay, it didn't translate when you saw it from the outside cam. From the third person view, it didn't look right. From the first person view, it looked amazing.
I completely agree with you. I did a lot of comparison between what I saw with that event with the World Drone Prix to what I see when I watch a NASCAR race or some other motorsport event. you know, there are different camera angles. They move the camera angles around. It's not one fixed camera that's just panning back and forth. They don't all do in-car cameras for the entire race. I think you need to move the camera perspectives around. You can't just have, if you want to sit and locked in on one racer or one pilot and watch their feed, that's great. But I think that needs to be a separate call out for the overall main production, for the main product that you're putting together. You have to have multiple cameras, multiple camera angles, have them be able to move, have them be able to either zoom in tight on these machines or, if possible, get a large enough group without the quadcopters being hard to see.
I mean, have you seen the pylon racing in Reno and places like that?
Yes.
That is how it should have been filmed. I used to go to the States quite often. I love Tahoe. I love, you know, Napa Valley, all around that area, Reno, and I've been to see that. It's a massive spectacle. It's amazing. These things are so quick. You know, a lot of them are World War II fighters with shorter wings on them, cut down wings and things like that. The way that's filmed and often televised on the American sports channels is the way this should be. Or the Red Bull Air Races or X Fighters. They use cable cams. They use very, you know, innovative camera techniques. The other thing I was thinking all along is, why the hell didn't they have drones filming the drones? It made massive sense to me to have like a chase drone safely off to the side of the track and possibly, you know, like running alongside it and shooting an angle from the side. But if you could get something that was fast enough to physically go from point A to point B on a straight and just strafe alongside the quads as they go by, you would get the full feeling of speed from the drones. And that's something I would have, you know, maybe got DJI or one of the Unique or one of the big filming platform manufacturers to get involved with and actually face that. We recently, it was about 2 years ago, did a whole sequence on TV where we were chasing motocross riders around a motocross track using drones. And it got the most amazing dynamic footage that you'll ever see. And it was the only thing that could kind of keep up with these. It was like the British champion on a 250, I think it was. And he was doing massive jumps and, you know, you could see how much effort he puts in around the corners. But the only way of filming that the way we did was with a drone. No stabilization on the axis, on the gimbal, no gimbal, nothing. It was a GoPro strapped to the front of a 330 size Thug race drone. And it did the best footage. That's the kind of thing I think we should have had.
That would have helped. That would have helped. The just being able to spot these quads themselves. I'm looking at pictures from the Drone Racing League, some of their machines, and that, as far as I know, a U.S. based organization. Those, to be quite honest, they look like a battery pack with propellers, but it's all lit up. It's got LEDs on the front, the sides, you know, they're all colored, they're easy to see. That's what I would have liked to have seen with the World Drone Prix. And that's where I hope, you know, if they could have a standard from organization to organization, that's where I'd like to see them go.
You know, a really simple thing that would have worked. You know, the glow sticks you get when you go to camp or, you know, firework nights and things like that, where you shake it, click it, and it lights for 6 hours. You can get different colors. They're not really heavy. Why not have one on the top of each, on the top of the battery pack, on a little loop that holds it there, and you actually see Tron-esque flashes of light going around the track, or design cowlings that actually refract the light inside, and a couple of LEDs actually work to light the whole of the cowling up. And most LEDs now, especially with the flight controllers in the latest generations we've got, you can RGB them. You can actually program them in, you know, base flight, clean flight, whatever software people are using, to change the color of those LEDs to customize the look. Well, if you had some kind of opaque reflective cowling on the drones with a few LEDs built into that and the whole thing lit up, how cool would that be? green team, red team, blue team that's actually visible, and the LEDs aren't on the back or the underside of the drones. And it wouldn't drain as much amperage from the batteries because you've got less LEDs there. Not that they draw a lot anyway, but, you know, devil's advocate.
Yeah. That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
I was an engineering model maker as a teenager up until my early 20s. I worked.
You don't say.
Yeah, it was the first apprenticeship I ever did. You know, I worked for years on the end of a bench of a guy that was about to retire before I then took his bench over when he retired. That's the way it used to work back in the 80s. I did a lot of vacuum forming molds and things. And the more I look at these drones, the more I think I'm really sure if companies put their, you know, mind to it, they could create cowlings that would work on all of these drones so they don't just look like three sheets of carbon fiber with alloy standoffs, arms and motors. The other thing is, what's stopping us having LEDs that light up the blades, or UV reflective blades, or black lights on the track and UV reflective surfaces on the drone? So a bit like, I mean, here we go. Another part of my growing up was I ran a nightclub for 6 years in the 90s. UV and black lights are used a lot in clubland, part of the theater. Yeah. Well, we could have had a track that was UV reflective instead of lit up. We could have had UV reflective, you know, hydro dipping all over the quads, and they would light up in different colors. Or you could have the logos of the different teams all over them hydro dipped, so that you knew in a different color, so you know which quad was which. Even the blades lighting up would work. It would look absolutely immense.
That would.
But it's how you do it. And I think black lights could be a key, or just UV reflective, or even iridescent. You know, back to my glow sticks again, we've gone complete circle.
Yeah.
You know, think of what we do at Halloween. God, I've gone out and scared people senseless just by painting myself with iridescent paint. But, you know, it's the same thing with the quads. You can do it.
Yeah. And I...
It just takes a bit of forethought, and it needs people to sit down and go, looking at this from a spectator point of view, what do they see and what do they want to see? That's what it needs.
Yeah. And I'm gonna pause. I just, you know, I feel like I'm coming off like I'm bagging on this as a sport. I'm not doing that. I want them to succeed. And just from my spectator point of view, I found the quads hard to track. I found that when they had the track light up and the track lights would move with the track, they weren't moving with the action of what was going on. They were just moving for the sake of moving. It goes to that theater.
It was a sound and light controller on there and a guy pressing the buttons to make the lights. One thing I would say, which is brilliant, you know, I'm glad you picked up on that. I was going to suggest what they do is they have sensors in the track that detect when a quad is passing over it. And there could also be a sensor built into the quad, like that fires a light at it, infrared or something. And it basically triggers aspects of the track to follow the quads around. So all those different sections and sectors within the track light up as the quad passes over it. Maybe this is just my crazy brain and the way I work, but that's what I'd have done if it was me.
Yeah, that two of us, that's marked me down as well. That would be an...
Is four quads going around the track with the track lighting up under each, all four of them. And then when there's an overtaking move going on, you'd see that section of the track catching up with the other pilot and then equaling it and then overtaking it. And that would be really exciting.
That would have added so much to the viewing of this event for me. I could have actually followed what was going on. I ended up watching most of it from first person view just because I could at least get a better understanding of what was going on.
Well, do you want to hear something really, really funny?
I'm always up for a joke.
I actually took the HDMI feed out of the back of, I've got a quad feed computer, so I can have four screens running. I've only got three at the moment. It's called HiveMind, but that's a very in joke. I took one of the feeds, HDMI feed, out and plugged it into my HedgePlay HD headset. There are other headsets available. That isn't a plug for that, by the way. I use that because I wear glasses and I can get them underneath. That's the disclaimer. And I actually watched it in my Headplay HD headset with just the downlink feeds, and it was brilliant. Imagine that translated thousands of times across the globe. People being able to do that on Oculus Rift or the new Sony headset that's coming out soon, or the new, you know, holographic headset that Microsoft are bringing out. That would be really amazing. That would take watching a spectator sport to a totally different level, because you're actually, it's actual reality again. It's not virtual, it's real. You're in the headset of those pilots. And you could click a feed and you go between the feeds. How cool would that be? All I did is just literally brought it up on my computer screen and HDMI'd it into my headset, but it worked brilliantly. And I could even have the sound on headphones. So I was fully immersed in it. But again, that's just the way my crazy brain works.
I think any idea like that would be huge, and it's worth a shot. You know, clearly there, and let's just not focus on the World Drone Prix, but let's just look at the sport as a whole. I think they're looking.
You know, in the daytime, I go to events that are done in the daytime. Sometimes it's hard to tell who's who, pilot-wise.
Yeah, good point.
Which is why cowlings or, you know, some way of, like, some on the battery strap, a really iridescent color, so you can see that flying around, would be important. Night races, there's going to be more and more of those because you can do so much with LEDs and things. It, you know, it's a tough one. I just think everybody involved in this, at whatever level, and I am involved in, you know, the British scene, needs to sit down and say, right, the pilots get X out of this because they're flying. They enjoy it. It's amazing. It's, you know, competitive. They progress. They get better the more races they enter, et cetera, et cetera. But what do the spectators and the people that we expect to drive all over the UK and the world to events get out of it? And that's the thing we've got to kind of tick the box for.
That's a good way to put it. That's a very good way to put it.
Because at the moment, I don't think that box is half ticked.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so passionate that this could be such a cool, they call it an e-sport as well, some of the tech blogs, which I find quite a few amusing. It's like a future sport, an e-sport. I think, you know, you can make words up as you go along, but
yeah,
it should be a spectacle. It should excite and inspire people. You know, we have a little mantra in Hivemind with all the RC titles we do. We want to stimulate, excite, and inspire and educate. What we don't want to do is promote negativity or, you know, make people think, oh, it's not worth getting involved in this because of X, Y, and Z. People's first experience of any hobby activity sets a precedent for it going forward. How many RC cars are there in lofts or garages all over the world where somebody's gone to a hobby store and bought a nitro car, couldn't start it properly, didn't run it in, seized the engine, had a horrible experience, burnt themselves on the exhaust, and then thought, British expression now, sod this, I'm not going to do it anymore, and then it ends up in the loft or on eBay or in the garage. There's planes in lofts and garages all over the world, helicopters. And I bet there's lots of quadcopters by the minute. It's about people's first experience and their education in it being the most positive it can be. And it all boils down to, is this sport exciting? Is it inspiring me to go to a... How many people went and watched that and went to a model shop and bought one the following week? I actually think there was quite a few. And reading the comments on some forums and Facebooks and people talking to me, there's people that I would in a million years never have thought of buying a race quad, have been out and bought them since or built one. So it did kind of work, but, and I'll leave three dots after the but.
There's room for improvement with anything. There's room for improvement. I you know, my takeaway was I'm interested. And I want to see more, and I want to see it progress, and I want to see it get better. I showed my kids, I've got three boys, I showed them some of the feeds just to gauge their interest. They are, they're younger, but they do a lot of gaming. They do a lot of iPad usage, and God knows their eyes are stuck to YouTube more often than I would like. But I was able to get their attention diverted over to a different YouTube channel for a while, and I was showing them some of the first person view and some of the more expanded view of the course itself. And while they didn't drop what they were doing to pay attention to this, it held their attention. They thought the first person view was cool. They weren't sure of the size or the scale of the course until I showed them a zoomed out, you know, full field image. And then I think, you know, it clicked with them that this is a massive course that these little contraptions are flying on, and they go up and they go down and everything's lit up. And, you know, they saw the arms move. They thought that was cool. So the theatrics worked there. But I think the more kids see this, the more people that are just interested in something new, they want a challenge, but they're not sure what. I think this is a perfect opportunity for them. I know I haven't been anti-aircraft at all. I know my capabilities, and I'm not sure I would be able to land one of these things after I got it up in the air. I've flown, my father has a quad. I flew that maybe a year ago. I had a blast doing that. So I'm looking at avenues where I could get my hands on another quad to sharpen my skills and just to get better, because it is fun. We've always wanted to fly. You know, we're not birds. We can't do that. So we strive to mimic that flight feeling in any way that we can. I think this is an amazing opportunity. Just if you want to go out to a park or a field and putter around with that, you can. But then if you want to step it up, there's this competition side. And I think the competition side has a massive amount of potential. I hope that they can bring it along in a measured enough way where they don't get too big too fast.
Yeah,
and missteps along the way.
Agreed. There's a steep initial learning curve if you don't approach it the right way. The best way and the biggest advice I can give anybody is, before you buy anything, do anything, find where your local club is, or find a national event. Whatever country you're in, there'll be a governing body. There will be people putting on FPV race events, and just go and watch it and talk to the people. RC car racing can be clicky. I'll be open and honest about that, but not in all fields of it. The crawler guys, the scale guys are really cool. The grassroots club level racing that happens in like a school gym on a Wednesday night, nicest people you'll ever meet. But sometimes nationally, and especially internationally, it can be quite clicky because they're pro teams out there for a purpose. I just think the quad guys and the guys FPV racing are the nicest group I've met in a long, long time. I've seen pilots, and this has been quoted by other pilots out there and other people, that would literally take components off their quad to give to another pilot so that pilot could enter a race, even if it meant him beating the pilot that took the parts off. Does that make sense? It's like, yeah, they see somebody that's crashed. He's got three motors still working. There is no other motors available. A guy, and I think I can quote Jab1A here, who's a British pilot. He did it to somebody once. He unscrewed his motor, he unsoldered it, and he gave it to somebody. That doesn't happen in many other forms of RC. In the scale world, yeah, I've seen it happen loads. I've took all four of my wheels and tires off a rig before and given them to a kid to enter a competition because what he came with were unweighted and weren't the correct tires to do anything on that comp course he was on. And he came back grinning. That's, to me, worthwhile. That's what this hobby should be all about. And I think almost ready to fly and ready to fly quads are out there, which are more accessible than having to build something, program something, tune something yourself. But I don't think they're a really good way into FPV racing because you need to learn all those aspects. It's a bit like a rite of passage. Most people's RC car rites of passage are Tamiya based. I don't know anybody really, many I've spoken to, that didn't have a Tamiya somewhere along the line that got them into the hobby. It's the same with building your own quad. It's not that difficult if you approach it correctly with the right information. And once you've learned that skill, it translates on everything you build going forward after that. It, you know, it's a bit hippy trippy here. It's a bit like a Jedi building his own lightsaber. You know, if you went into Walmart and bought one, it wouldn't be as good, would it?
No.
And it'd probably be cheaper and fall to bits, but that's another thing altogether.
Yeah. Well, that's great insight. I really enjoyed our chat. I enjoyed getting your input and your take on the sport, on the World Drone Prix as an event, as quadcopter and drone racing as a sport or potential sport, and really as a spectator sport. I think that's a good way to get a lot of people hooked as well. Mm.
We should check back every so often when an event's happened and do a debrief.
That would be great.
I've got my hand on my heart now. I really hope that the next time we're discussing this topic, we've both gone, wow, it worked. They did it. You know, they ticked every box this time, as opposed to kind of half ticking one box and then fully ticking another. There's so much potential, and it's such an exciting hobby and sport for people both to get involved with or just to watch, that it deserves to do well. It's just give it 6 months or a year and let's talk again and let's see what's happened.
Sounds like a deal to me.
Cool.
Sounds like a deal to me.
Virtual knuckle bump.
Yeah. Woo. So I do thank you for your time. And now I want to give you an opportunity. If you have anything, and I say this laughing because I know you have a few things.
I'll be honest. I think I've probably exhausted them all. All I'll say to people is, all the magazines I produce are free to download. The reason we're doing it as a free model is I truly believe, as do my business partners and every single contributor that writes for me globally, and there's some big names within different parts of the hobby, that the people that really matter in this hobby are the readers and you guys, you know, listening to this. Why should we charge you for something when what we want to do is inspire you? We want to educate you. We want to inform you. What we don't want to do is patronize you and take money out of your pocket. What I'd rather you do is spend that $5 or $10 or £5 or whatever you would be charged and put it towards something that puts a smile on your face. You know, that first FPV race quad build, that first RC car, a Tamiya kit, you know, a helicopter, whatever you guys want to get involved with, use that money towards that, because I think the brands that make this industry, you know, work and revolve are the ones paying for this magazine for you via the advertising. So at the moment, we're on 3 issues to download free for RC Car Zone and 1 issue to download free for UK Drone Show magazine. Tim, I'm dead sure we'll put all the hyperlinks up for you to be able to just click and download them for free anyway. I'm even happy him hosting them on his own blog and website for you to download. I look at this as open source publishing. You know, you can take the magazine, you can distribute it to as many people as you want. You can cut articles out of it and give it to people. If it inspires you to do something interesting with RC, then I can sit down, put my feet up, drink a cup of coffee and feel like I've achieved something. You know, if it doesn't, or it's not right for you, or you don't think we're, you know, writing the right kind of articles, or it doesn't do anything at all for you, then feed back to me and we can amend things like that. But hey, that's my bit. I'll stand off my soapbox now. I'm on issue 4 of RC Car Zone and I've got to get on with it.
Okay, we have to do a second virtual fist bump because that was awesome.
Really?
Boom. Yes. Drop the mic, walk off.
Somebody posted to me last night on Twitter just a thank you that basically said, I've inspired them. And he's had 10 odd years out of the hobby, the car side, and just reading one of the 3 mags we've produced has inspired him to go out and buy one yesterday. And he had the most amazing time with his kids because it's the Easter holiday here in the UK. And it was just a thank you on Twitter. And that probably meant more to me than anything in the last few months. We've achieved a lot as a company. And issue, like I'm saying, issue 4 is halfway through production at the moment. We should have it out by the end of the month. We're not going to release it until I'm 100% happy with it. You know, even if it's 2 weeks later than people expect it, it doesn't matter, because I'd rather give the readers the best we can give them every issue, as opposed to rushing something through and putting filler in there. One of the guys I know really well that works on Top Gear magazine and works on Fifth Gear TV program has an expression, all beef, no filler. And that's kind of stuck in my head the last few years. So that's what we're trying to give everybody.
And I'm going to
knuckle bomb you.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'm gonna piggyback on what you said. You know, everything that I do from you know, the RC Noob standpoint, from the write ups to the reviews to the news to the podcast, videos, you name it, whatever I've got my hands in, whatever content I'm putting out, I'm hoping that people that have, if you're on the fence about getting into any hobby, that you give a serious consideration and a good hard look to RC vehicles. Again, whether they be cars, trucks, planes, quads, helicopters, boats, whatever it is, I've found that to be such a therapeutic release for myself. I can just, it's my Zen moment when I can have a vehicle in front of me, even if I'm fixing something or bolting something onto it. It's my Zen state, and I hope to be able to share that same amount of joy and calm and tranquility to as many people as possible. So forever, all the people that have listened to the podcast and you know, read the articles that I've been posting on the site, I deeply, deeply thank you for those, for doing that. If you haven't checked out Peter's and his team's magazines, plural now, Pete, where can they find those at?
Oh, we'll post the links on your website, but the best thing to do, Google is your friend. Literally just Google RC Car Zone and we come up straight away top of the list, and UK Drone Show magazine, and again we come up top of the list, and they're free to download from both of those websites. UK Drone Show is a drone expo that happened for the first time last December in the UK at the big exhibition center called the NEC. We ran 2 days of drone racing. It was a massive expo for all the top companies globally who attended. And the big news that I can announce now is that RC Car Zone will have our own section or zone there with FPV car racing. And we're going to do a lot of crossover between the tech. So there'll be camera platforms which are surface-based. Buggy Cam is one that springs to mind, is a really cool camera platform that's out there at the moment, that's been out to Hollywood and back doing adverts, you know, films, everything. And it's basically a fifth scale filming rig with full stabilization that's got a big payload to carry up to red cameras and things. But it's an RC Car Zone based on a fifth scale electric lossy. Things like that I find really exciting. And we'll have a whole area this year full of stuff like that, as a kind of spin-off. Yes, it's a promotional thing for the car mag, but why not? It's important. An RC Car Zone will hopefully grow, and it may even become its own expo one day, but we're embedded within UK Drone Show itself. So, you know, read all the magazines, give yourself, I would say, 4 or 5 hours, because they're quite in depth. There's a lot in there. You can't read them all in one sitting. The drone mag is 150 pages. That shocked a lot of people. They're expecting 90 to 100 pages. And just to tell you now, we've only been launched since midday on Saturday, and we're close to 15,000 downloads, which to me is phenomenal. I mean, that's without even advertising it. That's literally word of mouth and social media. 27,000 people looked at my initial post to launch it. And it's just gone from there. So I'm over the moon with that. And it proves that that aspect of the industry has lots of buoyancy at the moment. And that part of the tech scene is growing and growing and growing.
But I'm still getting my head wrapped around those numbers. That's amazing. Congratulations to you and your entire team.
Well, the CarMag's, you know, 20,000 plus, I would say, a month now. I think this drone mag is going to go 30,000 plus, and it never goes off the shelf. It's always there. Every issue builds up as like a hall of records for RC. They'll always be there as a digital thing online to download for free. So for the advertisers especially, how many advertisers can say that their advert just stays at infinitum within the free-to-download digital mag, or that there's videos that they can click on built in, or 10 URLs in one advert going to every single distributor for that product? You can't get that in print. I was a massive print magazine fan up to a few years ago, and then print advertising sales died a death, and people just go into a lot of hobby stores even, pick up a mag, read it, put it back on the shelf and walk out again. I'd rather people carry this with them on their smartphone, their tablet, which is always a term that makes me laugh, tablet, you know, on their computer, and they can dip in and out of it when they want to. It's not about sitting and reading a whole magazine in one go. I think one guy said to me the other day, who I really value as a friend, who's from outside the publishing industry, said, I never read a whole digital mag in one go anyway. I probably read 10-15% of it and then leave it, put it down, and then go back to it. But as long as they read all of it or they get something from it, that's all that matters to me.
It's very cool.
And this is me without coffee. Could you imagine me with coffee?
Sadly, this is me with caffeine. I'm still, come on, man. Kick it.
Yeah, but look at the time zone. It's 1 p.m. here and it's 7 o'clock in the morning there. I feel sorry for you, dude.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. It hopefully shows my passion for the hobby. Definitely not my energy level at the moment, that's for sure. If people want to get in touch with you, you yourself, Peter Gray, how can they do that? Through Twitter?
They can email me. I mean, I've got my own Twitter. The old magazine was Radio Race Car International. I've kept my Twitter feed as it is. It's RRCI_MadPete. Mad Pete has always been my nickname from jumping transit vans on BMX bikes days without a landing ramp and skateboarding, which I still do, believe it or not. Not the transit van jumping, but the skateboarding and snowboarding. Dude, I broke my ankle in front of about 150 people who were watching. But there you go.
Good point.
You can get in touch with me via Twitter. In the magazines, my email address is in there. However they want, I'm easily contactable. If you just Google Peter Gray, my ugly face comes up. RRCI, Peter Gray, or rccar.zone.
And there you guys have it. Thank you very much, Peter. Again, I
anytime,
can't say
dude.
Enough.
Anytime.
How much fun I've had talking to you, not just now, but offline. This is a little bit of a unique show because of the timing of the event, the World Drone Prix. I wanted to talk about that, but I do want to have you back on to get your full story, get your background, and have you share more of your insight. So hopefully you'll be game for that.
Yeah.
For those of you listening, thank you very much. I do appreciate all of the feedback that we've been getting on the show. If you have a thought, comment, topic idea, something you'd like us to cover on the show, feel free to send that my way. You can do that either through rcnoob.com. We have a new contact form up, or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, really any social media platform. We're out there in more ways than one. So thank you again for listening. If you have not yet subscribed to the show and you want to, you can go ahead and do that through iTunes or your favorite podcasting app client. Just search for the RC Noob Podcast. Do tell your friends if you like the show, or even if you don't like the show, if you think it needs to be improved, you know, give us a rating on iTunes. Help me improve the show. Help us improve the show. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for the feedback that we've gotten so far. So with that, until next time, keep those batteries charged up, keep your nitro topped off, and we will talk to you later.